Good morning. It is time to get up with Double Trouble in the Bubble. LA superstars coming up big. Which is the favorite to wear the crown? Plus, it is the biggest question in the NFL, and it's not going to be answered anytime soon. Is that the right way to play it, or a pointless smokescreen? And then, could circumstances decide that these two budding stars both see the field well before they're ready? And if so, is that a huge mistake? Those are some of the questions. We've got all of the answers as we get up with you starting right now on a Monday from Bristol, Connecticut. I'm Mike Greenberg. Hope you had a terrific weekend. We have so much to get to this morning. A ton of football news out there, but we will begin with the game of the night, which was played in the afternoon, but why quibble? In the bubble, Mavs, Clippers, Game 6, LA and Kawhi looking to put it away. Luka looking to keep his season alive in what has been a coming out party in this postseason. Here we go. End of the first quarter. Mavs down a deuce. Oh, here's a dirty play. Marcus Morris and Luka have a history. It goes back about a week, and this was going to be the end of it, at least for this series. As you take another look, this is the third incident between the two. Morris this time hitting Luka on the head. Luka not happy, and understandably so. Morris getting called for a flagrant two and ejected, and correctly so. So that was that storyline. Meanwhile, to the third quarter, Clippers up a dozen, and it would become the Kawhi show. Oh, look at this. Connie Hawkins, anybody? Look at him putting it up and good. Clippers a 14-point lead. On the other end, shot clock winding down. Luka was so good, it's impossible to put it into words. Oh, he gets Paul George to jump and the foul. Mavericks down 11 after three. Fourth quarter, Mavs down 9. They wouldn't make it all the way back, but you can't blame this kid. Luka Doncic, 38, 9 boards, 9 assists. He was brilliant, but in the end, it was too much. Kawhi, Seth Curry, bad matchup. Clippers up 9. The lead is 8, and it's Kawhi looking to put it away. 33 points, 14 rebounds, 7 assists. 5 steals. There's nothing he didn't do. Kawhi and the Clippers advancing to the second round.
You always celebrate. I mean, you could be going home right now. So, you know, just it's one step closer to, you know, where we want to get to. So, you know, it's a good accomplishment.
Kawhi is a man of business. He stepped up. He stepped in. I mean, time after time, you know, whenever we needed him, he put us on his back. He finished the series. I can't say it enough. I mean, he's just one of a kind.
I mean, literally did everything for the Clippers yesterday with the points and the boards and the assists and the steals. He's the 7th player in NBA history with that stat line and the first in 20 years, MJ, Pippen, Barkley, and others you see on the list who have accomplished that feat. And we'll have a lot of basketball conversation this morning, and it begins right now with Jackie McMullen and Kendrick Perkins. Good morning to both of you. And let's start with the Kawhi of it all here. Big fella, how would you describe what Kawhi in these playoffs, picking up where he did last year, what he did for his team yesterday and in this series?
Well, it's been phenomenal, Greeny. When you look at it, I keep saying this, Kawhi games mimic Michael Jordan. He's been the best player series and been not talked about because of Luka and his age and what Luka has done at the age of 21. But you look at Kawhi and what he's done on the offensive end. Doc basically moved him to the point guard position. Forget that he's the best mid-range scorer in the game today, but I'm talking about his facilitating, the way that he's able to make others around him better. And then on the defensive end last night, we saw him take it upon himself to guard Luka. To try, you know, Dallas had to run pick and rolls to get the switch, but he was on Luka on the defensive end, and he had to do everything on the offensive end. You saw what happened last night when they took him out of the start. I mean, when they took him out in the start of the fourth quarter, man, Dallas went on that run. Doc Rivers said, hold on, I got to get Kawhi back in there. We're talking about a guy that's averaging 30-plus, 10-plus rebounds. So he's been dominant, the best player in that series by far.
No question. I saw you tweet yesterday, Perk, that they need him to do everything. I don't know if that's good news or bad news because he's capable of doing it. But, Jackie, what are your thoughts on Kawhi and the performance he gave them yesterday, especially when they needed buckets in that fourth quarter?
Well, Greeny, I think you see how devastating he is as an ISO player, and they were smart enough to get him in ISO situations. You mentioned the matchup with Curry, and he's just in that zone now. And I will say this, all the people, and I was one of them, that said, Why is he sitting out all these regular season games? That doesn't feel like the right thing to do. Who's having the last laugh here? Kawhi Leonard is playing big minutes, as Perk mentioned, excelling on both ends of the floor. He looks fresh. He looks focused. The Clippers handled this the right way. Kawhi Leonard handled this the right way. He's been, in my opinion, the most dominant player in these playoffs.
Yeah, certainly. Last year, he was as good as anyone practically ever and doing it again. But I don't think we should let this series go by, Jackie, without acknowledging the coming out party. I think that this is the dawning of the era of Luka Doncic that we saw. Someday we will look back and say this series that they lost in six games was when we first discovered what Luka Doncic is about to become. How would you put into perspective, Jackie Mack, what we saw from Luka these six games?
Well, it's just, and Perk hit on it, it's incredible what he's doing as a 21-year-old. But I think what people who maybe didn't follow him very closely before don't understand is he was doing things like this as a 16-year-old overseas. If I'm Luka, I'm always going to wonder, how would this series have gone if my tag team friend Porzingis could have played in this series? He's a transcendent talent. He's going to be around for a long, long time.
I had that same thought, Big Perk. I don't know what would have happened in this series. And every minute that was played when Porzingis was playing and eligible, the Mavericks looked like the better team. At minimum, the Clippers couldn't stop them. But putting that aside, how good is he? I mean, you watch him, Perk. You've been playing this game. How good is this kid, Doncic, at 21?
He's so good, Greeny. He's a top five player right now. We're talking about a guy who don't rely on his athleticism. Luka gets his spots. He rely on his skill set. I was just so amazed on how he was able to handle the pick and rolls while he was getting guys on his hips, going downhill, finishing at the rim. And another thing, Greeny, this is a guy that's not that athletic that goes and gets rebounds. Like, he gets them at a high usage rate for us with, you know, being a point forward, should you call him, but the sky's the limit. He's been a top five guy for me all season long, and he proved it in these playoffs.
100%. And when they need him, he doesn't miss. It was a spectacular performance, but not enough. On go the Clippers, and we'll talk much more about this as we go. Big Perk and Jackie, stay close. We're coming back to you. Meanwhile, to the NFL. And this fascinates me. The Chicago Bears will open their season against the Lions in Detroit 2 weeks from yesterday. Bears coach Matt Nagy is not committing to who will lead the offense. Mitchell Trubisky, Nick Foles. It's a competition for the starting job. And yesterday, the coach made it clear. He's not telling anybody who's starting the game up until the moment that they kick the ball off. Kimberly Martin is with us this morning. What are you hearing out of Chicago about the Bears quarterback competition, Kimberly?
This is just another confounding move in the quarterback situation in Chicago. It's all about competitive advantage for these coaches. And Coach Matt Nagy thinks that if he doesn't announce a starter between Trubisky and Nick Foles, then he'll keep the Detroit Lions off balance a little bit and have to prepare for both.
So what is your sense there, though? We all know the history with Trubisky. We know they traded up to take him. We know who went after him in that draft. All that is water under the bridge. And then, of course, they bring in Foles, who had the miracle playoff run with Philadelphia. What is your sense of where the advantage is there?
Listen, Greeny, I don't get it. I really don't. Regardless of who they name as a starter, whether it's Mitch Trubisky or Nick Foles, the fact that we are having a quarterback competition with a former number two overall pick in year four of his career tells us all we need to know about what the Bears think of Mitchell Trubisky. I question the amount of faith they have in him, because not only did they turn down his fifth-year option, they brought in Nick Foles to compete. And given what we know about Trubisky, he is somebody who has struggled with confidence issues in the past. He's somebody where there's questions about his mental toughness. And I think if you're the organization and you firmly believe that Mitch is the guy, then this move, then just say it. Say we're riding with Mitch. But there are questions about whether Nick Foles gives them the best chance to win. And I actually do think he does.
It's Kimberly Martin. Stay close, Kimberly. I have much more for you. But let me bring the rest of my football crew in from this morning. And I got Booger McFarland, Tim Hasselbeck, and Mike Tannenbaum. And I want to start with you, Tim, as the quarterback in the conversation here. It's all well and good to try and keep the other team guessing. That's fine. But do you believe that 2 weeks before the season begins, the coach knows, the two quarterbacks know, and the locker room knows who the starting quarterback is?
Yeah, I think all of those people have a really good sense. If it hasn't been you know, stated directly, you know, to either quarterback or the team. I think, you know, typically speaking, a team understands based on how reps go, how the practices are going, you know, who the guy is going to be. So, look, I think that in typical years, coaches have tried to do this in the past, to try to hide the starter, and then it ends up getting out. You see it throughout the preseason. You know, media has access to practices, as do fans sometimes in training camp. This is a unique year. If anyone was ever going to be able to hide an announcement like this, this would be the year that you could actually do that. But I do think in terms of making a decision, Matt Nagy is going to make a decision the week before or, you know, at some point this week about who a starter is going to be. And then that guy will get prepared to be the starter. The team will know about it. And then the question just ends up being, does it leak out?
What is your sense, Kim, quickly, of who that will be and should be?
Listen, I think it's going to be Mitchell Trubisky, and I know that's an unpopular take, but the reality is this. Nick Foles, in 8 years, has never played 16 games. You know, he went 0-4 in Jacksonville last year. The Bears only gave up a fourth-round pick to acquire him, and they have a lot invested in Mitchell Trubisky. Do they need him to play well? Yes, they do, and I think there's a better opportunity for him to play well if he's named the starter rather than if he comes week 8 or whatever it may be. So, you know, remember, he did – basically, you know, play better than Nick Foles in a playoff game where they just missed a field goal, you know, to lose that football game. I think they still think he can be good, and I think he'll get the first crack at it.
That's right. These two guys did face each other in a postseason game 2 years ago. Big fella, Booger McFarland, I remember I was sitting with you. You and I were having dinner together watching the draft that night when the Bears took Trubisky. Here we are right now. This is a crossroads because if they make a decision on Foles here, that's essentially writing the ending of the story of Mitchell Trubisky in Chicago. What do you expect to happen?
Well, Greeny, they may as well go ahead and write their story, because if you wanted Mitchell Trubisky to be your starting quarterback, why do you bring in Nick Foles to create competition? I just think that if you go back to last season, Greeny, Trubisky struggling with his confidence, not really giving his team hope on a Sunday. Like, that's one of the jobs of a quarterback. You have to inspire the other 52 guys on that active roster to know that we can put the ball in your hands every single play. And with Mitchell Trubisky not wanting the TVs on in the facility, a lack of confidence. Well, guess what? If you don't have confidence in yourself, how in the hell can I have confidence in you? And I think the organization, Matt Nagy, Ryan Pace, recognized that. They brought in Nick Foles to create competition, but there's really no competition. This is Nick Foles' job to lose. And to your earlier point, Greeny, about naming the starter and who the starter is going to be, I fully expect the starter to be Nick Foles. I think that I agree with Tim. Everyone on that team is going to know, and it's just going to be a matter of time whether or not that leaks out. But I think if you're the Bears,
yeah,
and you want this defense that is a championship-type defense to play up to their level, and you want this team to have some confidence in an unusual year of 2020, you put Nick Foles in, and you invigorate that team to start this season.
Okay, I have to leave it there for a moment. Mike T., I will come to you, but we are. I have breaking news. We've been waiting for confirmation on this all morning long, and indeed we have it, and it is very sad news that I have to pass along. But legendary Georgetown basketball coach John Thompson has died. Thompson put Georgetown on the map, particularly in the 1980s. He spent 27 seasons as the head coach of the Hoyas, led them to the national championship in 1984 as the coach of some of the most legendary teams in the history of the sport. He was instrumental in the careers of so many of the all-time greats in the game, including Hall of Famers Patrick Ewing and Alonzo Mourning and Dikembe Mutombo and Allen Iverson. Thompson himself was elected into the Hall of Fame in 1999. He was 78 years old. Here are some numbers. In his 27 seasons on the bench at Georgetown, Thompson was able to rack up nearly 600 wins, by far the most in program history. In addition to the 84 championship, he also led the program to the Final Four in 1982 and 1985. He was twice recognized as the National Coach of the Year. His impact in the game of basketball felt in so many different ways in so many different places, including at the professional level. He produced four future Hall of Famers, while at Georgetown, big men like Patrick Ewing, Dikembe Mutombo, Alonzo Mourning, and Allen Iverson. Thompson was and still arguably is the symbol of Georgetown basketball. And here's R.J. Billis, who joins us again as we are just getting this news confirmed. And here, Jay, I know we called you about a half hour ago, and we're sorry to have to be the ones to tell you this sad news. What are your first thoughts this morning on the passing of a truly legendary figure in the history of the sport?
Yeah, profoundly sad, Greeny, but it's something where you want to celebrate an amazing life of John Thompson. He was not only a great coach, he was an unmatched mentor to his players. And you talk about, you know, today taking a stand on social justice. John Thompson did that before it was cool. You'll probably remember in the 80s, he walked out of a game to protest what was called Proposition 48. It was an academic requirement that was that disproportionately affected African-American athletes. And John Thompson, John Chaney, they would have none of it and really fought against it and got it changed. But he walked off the floor before the tip of a Big East game in order to protest that. And I know you'll recall, because that was our era, when he would educate his players on how the system worked. I mean, people talked about Hoya paranoia and all that stuff. But he would stand up in front of his players and say, hey, here is my shoe contract. We're wearing this brand of shoes, and you know who's getting paid? Me, and not you. And, you know, stuff like that. He would educate them on that. And he was just a tremendous, tremendous coach on and off the floor, and never got enough credit. In the 1980s, he almost went to the Final Four in 1980, and in fact lost to Iowa, 81-80, I think the score was, in the Elite Eight. And Lute Olson went to his first Final Four, and we lost Lute Olson a few days ago. So a very, very difficult week for college basketball.
No question, and you're exactly right. It feels this morning as though there are really two completely separate stories involving the passing of John Thompson. There was the legendary basketball coach and all that he did on the floor and all that his teams were. And then there is the side of it you were talking about, where Thompson was one of the legendary mentors to so many of his players. Allen Iverson, I'm thinking of in his Hall of Fame speech, essentially saying that he believes John Thompson is the reason that he, AI, is still alive today. So there's that side of it. And yes, Proposition 48 is perhaps the most famous of those examples. Let's talk about the basketball side of it, though, for a moment here. Those, at a time when March Madness was becoming March Madness, those Georgetown teams that with Ewing that made the Final Four three out of his four seasons, losing one of the most famous games ever to Villanova in the last one, beating Hakeem Olajuwon, losing to Michael Jordan and North Carolina, those are among the greatest and most legendary teams, Jay, in the history of college basketball.
Absolutely. And again, I think sometimes people focus on the Hoya paranoia part, the fact that Georgetown did all of their media obligations, but no more. They stayed in hotels that weren't NCAA hotels. They would stay away from everything and keep isolated a bit. And that rubbed some people the wrong way. But when they got on the floor, that was a together team that was very disciplined and very smart. And you'll remember, Greeny, they were magnificent defensively. Not good. They were magnificent and really intimidated people by how smart and disciplined they were defensively. You know, it wasn't just that they were athletic or just that they had Patrick Ewing to block shots. Michael Jackson, one of the best defensive guards in the 80s, certainly that I saw. But they were an extraordinary team. And in 1982, they were, you know, a turnover away from beating North Carolina and James Worthy and Michael Jordan in that game in New Orleans. And then they were the best team in 1985. They got upset by Villanova when you literally had to play a perfect game to beat Georgetown. That's how good the Hoyas were.
Absolutely. And I think maybe one more thought from you, if I could, on, and maybe this is my own personal bias because of where I grew up and the time that I grew up, but I feel like those rivalries in the Big East really went such a long way towards creating what college basketball subsequently became with John Thompson at Georgetown and Jim Boeheim at Syracuse and all of those rivalries and what basketball, St. John's and Louis Carnesecca, what that meant to the growth of the sport at that time. He was right in the middle of that. And I guess really in its own way, he was the most important person in the middle of all that.
Oh, I think he was, and I don't think you'd get any pushback from any coaches in the Big East. When the Big East was formed and Dave Gavitt was the architect of all that, without John Thompson, we wouldn't have seen the Big East rise to that level. And it wasn't just that he could be a showman at times with, remember the Louis Carnesecca sweater in the garden and things like that. He took a stand, and it wasn't that he took a stand all the time on everything. It wasn't that. When it was important, he took a stand. And that's what I'll remember most. I was very fortunate to get to know him. And he's one of the people I admired most in the world. John Thompson was a great human being, and not just a great coach. His impact went so far beyond X's and O's and, you know, 800 wins, whatever it was. It was more about who he was as a person, and he was just a tremendous human being.
Well said. Jay, thank you so much for doing this on such short notice. I really appreciate it. I'm getting a call as we speak from Dick Vitale. He's going to join us coming up in a few minutes on the program, as well as we continue to remember this morning John Thompson, a legendary figure whom we lose yesterday at the age of 78. Much more reaction to the passing of a legendary figure and more in the world of sports as we continue this morning on Get Up.
Shopping for Mother's Day is usually a challenge because you wait until the last minute, but Macy's Gift Finder makes it incredibly fast and easy to find the right gift just in time for Mother's Day. Whether you're shopping for your sister's first Mother's Day or your fashionista mom who loves to make a statement, Macy's Gift Finder has so many great gift ideas that you can easily pick out something special to celebrate them both. You can shop by price, anywhere from $25 and under to $100 and under. You can also sort by category like fragrance, handbags, and more, or gift lists like for the mom who has everything, pre-wrapped gifts or gifts for grandma. Find top brands like Studio Pro Model Beats headphones, Polaroid cameras, and Samsung smart TVs. So what are you waiting for? Mother's Day is May 12th. It'll be here before you know it. Macy's has the perfect gift guide to make picking something for mom easy this year. Head to Macy's.com/giftfinder today. That's Macy's.com/giftfinder. Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are wonderful pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
We all know breakfast is an important part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any. You know what happens? You grab a cup of coffee and skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, and waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
We are back on Get Up with very sad breaking news this morning. Legendary Georgetown basketball coach John Thompson has died. The man who put Georgetown basketball on the map, spent 27 seasons as their head coach, led them to a national championship in 1984, a total of 3 Final Fours, was himself elected into the Hall of Fame in 1999. But to limit the discussion this morning to his accomplishments on the floor would be greatly underappreciating what he meant to college basketball and to sports in general. You see him there, easily the winningest coach in the history of that program. And for as long as I live, if you ask me what college basketball looks like and sounds like, I will say college basketball was Georgetown and Syracuse at the Garden in the 80s. That was the main event, and that was John Thompson and Jim Boeheim. And we are extremely grateful to Coach Boeheim for jumping on here and joining us for a moment live to remember that rivalry and your longtime friend, John Thompson. Coach, thank you very much for this. I know that this is a difficult morning, and I would just like to hear your thoughts this morning on the sad news.
Well, it's hard, you know, really hard right now. We had the toughest rivalry you can possibly have for a few years. And, North Carolina Duke is what everybody talks about in basketball, and I think it is the greatest rivalry over a long period of time. But for about 10 years, Syracuse Georgetown was, there was nothing quite like it. And John built that really out of nothing. You know, Mike, it's to build a program at Kentucky or Duke or North Carolina, people have done it before, people will do it again. But what John did at Georgetown, with the help of the start of the Big East, Dave Gavitt, but what John did was no one could ever see coming. And, you know, he was an imposing figure, and he willed his team to play a certain way. And he set an example, a standard for defensive basketball teams that, you know, coaches have tried to replicate ever since he was there. I mean, that's what coaches build their teams on. And, you know, Bob Knight did it in Indiana, but John Thompson did it at Georgetown, and everybody followed after that. And he set an example for all coaches. I think you can certainly say African-American coaches, what you have to do, what you have to be. But he set an example for all coaches. He was a great defensive basketball coach, as good as anybody, the best defensive teams that I've ever played against by a lot. And he set the standard. And you can't, as you said, you can't really over-exaggerate what John did. And we became great friends. I mean, it's still a rivalry, Syracuse Georgetown, but John and I became great friends after a few years at the end of our, when we were playing each other, and then, you know, up until today. But he was one of a kind. There's nobody like John Thompson. There really isn't, and I don't think there ever will be. It's hard. Like I said, it's hard to over-exaggerate. He was a bigger-than-life figure, and he brought change to college basketball, and he empowered a lot of African-American coaches and kids to come in and be the best, you know, be the best you can be. And, you know, it's hard to quantify, talk about it right now. It's just, you know, hard to put into words. I did the best I could, but it's really hard to put it into words. They talk about Mount Rushmore of coaches, and John Thompson is on it. You know, he's on it for a lot of reasons, but for certain, because he's one of the coaches you have to talk about when you talk about the great coaches in college basketball.
Jim Boeheim is with me on Get Up. The news is still very fresh. Jim, I so appreciate your willingness to do this. And I said earlier this morning that it feels like there were really two separate stories this morning. There is John Thompson, the basketball coach, and all that he accomplished, and he is in the Hall of Fame for that. But with Coach Thompson, there was so much more to it. And I wonder, for the younger people in our audience, if you could describe your recollections of some of the battles that he fought, particularly Proposition 48. Jay Billis brought up the time he walked off the floor. You talked about how he empowered young African-American athletes. Right now, we're at a particular moment where that is so prominent in the conversation. Many people may not know about what he did in the 80s. How do you remember all of it?
Well, he did it all before anybody. And, you know, what the NBA players did was really noteworthy this week, and what other athletes have done this summer. But John did that all by himself, virtually. You know, he had some help. John Chaney certainly comes to mind. But John just took it on by himself. It was a horrible rule, a racist rule. Because, you know, when Prop 48 hit, people, I don't have to get into the details, but it was really 90% of the people affected were African-American kids. And John wasn't having it. And he was not afraid to walk out at a time when that wasn't something that anybody would have thought about, and to stand up for what was right and for African-American kids. And, you know, that's what he did. and he continued to do that his entire career. He was, he was a great basketball coach. We don't want to sell that short, but he was a leader in the game and in life. And, you know, in today's world, he would be a huge addition to today's world. He would set a standard like no other would be able to. And there's no question the impact he had on all coaches, but especially African-American players, kids, and coaches. That's who people looked up to. That's who people from the cities, that's where the Georgetown shirts were. They were inner cities. There's kids wore them all over the place, and they wanted to be like Georgetown. They wanted to be strong. They wanted to be tough. They wanted to do it their way. And that's what John Thompson did. He did it his way, and he showed that it could be done for everybody. And you just can't overestimate the impact he had on all of us, all coaches, and especially African-American kids in the city. That's who they looked up to, John Thompson.
Jim Boeheim, if I could impose upon you for just one more thought, because he was such a legendary figure, and we talk about what he was as a coach and all of the games that he won, and we talk about what he was as a leader, and you just described that, but you mentioned that you became friends. How would you describe the man, John Thompson? Again, he was such an icon and such a legendary figure. I don't know how many people knew him well, but you did. How would you describe the man behind all of the accomplishments?
Well, not as tough as the guy that was in public. You know, he had a great sense of humor. He would kid with you, talk with you. He didn't show that side to the public. Publicly, he was as tough as they come. His team was tougher than any. When you played Georgetown, if you weren't tough, you got blown out. You got just rolled over. And he brought that to his team and his players. But he was really smart guy who saw things very clearly of what needed to be done, how the world worked, and, you know, really, really smart about business things and life, really, and understood people, understood what had to be done. But he had a very soft side. He didn't show it a lot, but I saw it after near the end. Even when we were playing, we were very close. Even near the end of his coaching career, we came to a mutual kind of like for each other and respect for each other. And I valued his friendship and looked forward to seeing him whenever I did. We always wanted to beat each other to death, but we became friends at the end. And that's not always easy to do when you go from the intense rivalry that we did have. It was like none other that I've ever had, and I'm sure never thought I would even get close to again, and haven't got close to again. But he was very, very, very smart and thoughtful guy that really understood how this world works, how the game of basketball works, and he understood people as well as anybody. And again, there's only one John Thompson. And I'm glad I got the opportunity to compete against him, and I'm glad that I got the chance to know him outside of basketball as well.
It's a sad day. Jim, I can't tell you how much I appreciate you taking this time this morning. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Mike.
All right, that's Jim Boeheim, Hall of Famer himself. Syracuse, Georgetown, the legendary rivalry of the 80s. His thoughts on his longtime rival and friend, John Thompson. Again, the legendary Hall of Fame coach, John Thompson, has died at the age of 78. We will have much more reaction to that as we continue. You're watching Get Up on ESPN. Get Up is brought to you by Bass Pro Shops and Cabela's. Your adventure starts here. And by Burger King. Mix and match your favorites for just $5. Welcome you back to our studios in Bristol. I'm Mike Greenberg, and again, the huge news this morning, the very sad breaking news that John Thompson has died at the age of 78. If you're just joining us, we talked about it with Jay Billis and the Hall of Famer Jim Boeheim. We'll have Dick Vitale with us in 20 minutes and much more reaction this morning to this sad news. There is also breaking news this morning from the National Football League, where the Jaguars have waived running back Leonard Fournette. Fournette was the number 4 overall pick in the 2017 draft. He rushed for 2,631 yards and 17 touchdowns in 3 seasons in Jacksonville. The Jaguars did not pick up his fifth-year option during the offseason, and now they have waived Leonard Fournette in what I think is extremely surprising news. Let's see what our crew thinks. Kimberly, I would describe this as surprising. What can you tell us?
Yeah, it is surprising, especially when you consider how much talent Leonard Fournette has and the fact that he was a former number 4 overall pick. The news coming a day after the Yannick Ngakoue trade to the Vikings, the Jaguars are showing that they are moving on from talent, but they clearly think that they're comfortable with the running backs that they have in that room. Leonard Fournette rushed for 1,000 yards twice in the 3 seasons that he was there. But clearly, Jacksonville ready to move on and thinks that it's better. They tried to trade him and couldn't. So this is the best option for them at this point.
I want to go to Booger here. Mike T, I'm coming to you in a minute on some other things. But Booger, that's an LSU guy. You're an LSU guy. I know you must know Leonard. And he came into the NFL about as hyped as any running back I can remember in a long time. And that's inclusive of Zeke Elliott and anybody. What is your reaction to this news this morning?
Well, Greeny just shocked, and you're right. He came in with a lot of accolades, and you know he came in as kind of that power back, not really known much as a guy that could catch the ball in the backfield, but he worked on that. But this just screams of a bigger issue. There's something going on in that Jacksonville front office in between them and Leonard Fournette. Otherwise, why would you release Fournette at this point? I get it. I think Jacksonville's trying to move on. They're going to tank for Trevor, whatever you want to call it. They're getting rid of talent. Whether that's smart or not, I don't know. Mike Tannenbaum, you can comment on that. I just know in the National Football League, you have to have talent to win. And it seems like so long ago when the Jacksonville Jaguars had a lead in Foxborough against the Patriots, they had the number 1 defense in the National Football League, and they were doing that with Blake Bortles. They had a formula. Now, think about the irony of that, Greeny. Now, on this day, you release Leonard Fournette, a guy who you took over Deshaun Watson, who you took over Patrick Mahomes, and Jacksonville is still needing a quarterback. So I just think that Jacksonville front office needs to figure out exactly what they want to do and who they want to be, Greeny. But as an LSU Tiger, it's very, very shocking that a guy that's still a very productive running back in this league is now on the street.
Mike T, what is your reaction to this, and in particular the idea that on consecutive days they send away Ngakoue and now Fournette?
I agree with Booger. It's really a sad day when you look at all the talent that has left that organization over the last couple of years, from Calais Campbell, Jalen Ramsey, Yannick Ngakoue yesterday, now Fournette. There's a lot of speculation in the league that Dabo Sweeney, who has been on the short list of multiple head coaching searches, could be a coach that teams want to talk about. And this would really be the perfect storm, Greeny, and here's why. He's immensely popular in that area of the country. And if he could go with Trevor Lawrence from Clemson right down the road to Jacksonville with all those picks and all those cap room, that's the ideal situation. And I know in talking to a number of NFL general managers, they see Dabo Sweeney in the same mold of a Pete Carroll, a high-energy guy. Pete Carroll's been a head coach in both college and the pros. If Dabo Sweeney, and that's a big if he was going to do it, this is the perfect situation, because in light of moving on from Leonard Fournette now, they just don't have a lot of playmakers. They have DJ Shark. They have Laviska Shenault, who they took in the second round. But I think the bigger story coming out of this is, if Sweeney would ever go, this is the perfect storm to do it with following this season.
That's a really interesting thought. We'll see what develops, if anything, there. But Tim Hasselbeck, let me come back to you. If you're a player on that team and you have seen all these guys go out the door, we're 2 weeks from the season and on consecutive days, and Ngakoue is gone and Fournette and all the other names, what are you thinking in that locker room?
Yeah, you're ridiculously frustrated because, you know, there's a good chance that you have the number one overall pick, which means you have a terrible season ahead of you. I would just say this. I think this kind of reeks of, you know, maybe some type of conflict prior to the releasing of Leonard Fournette. And I say that in, when you look at the history of Fournette, you know, in terms of, you know, not off the field trouble, but whether it's unhappy with a contract situation or an injury situation, speaking out against the team, you know, you trade away one of your best players, and now all of a sudden, you know, it could lead to another conflict because it really doesn't make any sense, to Booger's point, to release Leonard Fournette right now. You were paying him the last year of his rookie deal. He's, you know, obviously a more than capable back. And then you look at the rest of their roster at the running back position. Chris Thompson is a 5'8", 195-pound back. Other than Chris Thompson, they have about 200 yards of career rushing yards left on that roster. Mm. It makes zero sense whatsoever to let go of Leonard Fournette right now unless there was some type of conflict that happened between yesterday and today.
All right, I'll leave it there for the moment. Again, Leonard Fournette waived by the Jaguars less than 2 weeks before the season begins. Meanwhile, tomorrow night, an NBA playoff doubleheader starting on ESPN, 5:30 Eastern, is game two of the Celtics and Raptors. Then primetime on ABC, Jamal Murray and the Nuggets take on Donovan Mitchell and the Jazz. Game seven, winner take all in that first round series. Both games will be available on the ESPN app. And we will be back in just a moment on Get Up ESPN. If you were just joining us on ESPN this morning, the breaking, very sad news that we have lost legendary Georgetown basketball coach John Thompson at the age of 78, died overnight, and we have had a great deal of reaction this morning. We heard from his longtime rival and fellow Hall of Famer Jim Boeheim a few moments ago. Jay Billis is with us live, and Dick Vitale will join us off the top of the hour to remember the legendary John Thompson. Meanwhile, the sports world is also mourning the shocking loss of actor Chadwick Boseman, who passed away after a long battle with colon cancer. He, of course, embodied such roles as Jackie Robinson in 42, Vonte Mack in Draft Day, before becoming legendary as the Black Panther. Here is the Undefeated's Kelly L. Carter.
Chadwick Boseman was the first Black superhero not in a basketball court or a gridiron, and he'd earned respect from the world that he dabbled in often. He was Jackie Robinson. He was Vonte Mack. He was the Black Panther. He not only brought Robinson's athletic prowess to life, but he chased that role with 2014's Draft Day, where he starred as a top prospect Ohio State linebacker. Since his loss, the sports world has issued a public outpouring of bereavement. Guys like LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, Lewis Hamilton, Russell Wilson, and franchises like the Dodgers and the Browns all tweeted out their condolences, paying homage to both Boseman, who transformed on film as a sports star, and gave the world a new hero to root for as Wakanda's protector.
Growing up as a Black kid, you had superheroes that you looked up to, but they weren't Black. And to lose that, it's sad in our community.
The weekend Black Panther was released, which easily was 2018's most anticipated film, it was Boseman's popularity that eclipsed some of the biggest men in NBA. All-Star Weekend was in Los Angeles that year. He handed Indiana Pacers guard Victor Oladipo the Black Panther mask and then gave the now famous Wakanda salute. Boseman's last public appearance was at this year's NBA All-Star Weekend. Boseman was on the panel of judges during the slam dunk contest. Boseman was a superhero on and off the screen, and he truly was at the very beginning of a global career. From his first scene as Jackie Robinson in 2013, Boseman's star quality was evident, as was his impact.
Little white kids actually want to be Black Panther. It's not just that the Black kids want to do it. Little white kids, little Asian kids want to be Black Panther, and that's amazing.
Boseman was truly a marvel. Long live the king.
difficult weekend, losing Chadwick Boseman. We're back in just a moment. You're watching Get Up on ESPN.
Ten seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.